Hello, and welcome to GoGo Radio, found exclusively on GoGo.com. My name is Mike Simpson, and in this show, we are going to discuss threads and their use in Java. Be sure to check out my GoGo profile and send in any questions or comments using the box below. All right, let's get started. Computer users take it for granted that their systems can do more than one thing at a time. They assume that they can continue to work in a word processor while other applications download files, manage a print queue, and stream audio. Even a single application is often expected to do more than one thing at a time. For example, that streaming audio application must simultaneously read the digital audio off the network, decompress it, manage playback, and update its display. And even the word processor should always be ready to respond to keyboard and mouse events, no matter how busy it is reformatting text or updating the display. Software that can do such things is known as concurrent software. The Java platform is designed from the ground up to support concurrent programming. There are two basic units of execution in concurrent programming: processes and threads. Concurrent programming in Java is mostly concerned with threads. However, processes are also important. A computer system normally has many active processes and threads. This is true even in systems that only have a single execution core and thus only have one thread actually executing at any given moment. Processing time for a single core is shared among processes and threads through an operating system feature that's called time slicing. It is becoming more and more common for computer systems to have multiple processors or processors with multiple execution cores. This greatly enhances a system's capacity for concurrent execution of processes and threads, but concurrency is possible even on simple systems without multiple processors or execution cores. Let us take a moment to differentiate between processes and threads in Java. First, processes. A process has a self-contained execution environment. A process generally has a complete, private set of basic runtime resources. In particular, each process has its own memory space. Processes are often seen as synonymous with programs or applications. However, what the user sees as a single application may, in fact, be a set of cooperating processes. In order to facilitate communication between processes, most operating systems support inter-process communication, or IPC, resources such as pipes and sockets. IPC is used not just for communication between processes on the same system, but for processes on different systems as well. Most implementations of the Java virtual machine run as a single process. A Java application can create additional processes using a process builder object, but that's beyond the scope of today's discussion. So now let's talk a moment about threads. Threads are sometimes called lightweight processes. Both processes and threads provide an execution environment, but creating a new thread requires fewer resources than creating a new process. The key differentiation between processes and threads are that threads exist within a process. Every process has at least one thread. Threads share a process's resources, including memory and open files. This makes for efficient communication, but it also makes for potentially problematic communication. Multi-threaded execution is an essential feature of the Java platform. Every application has at least one thread, or several threads, if you count system threads that do things like memory management and signal handling. But from the application programmer's point of view, you start with just one thread, called the main thread. And this thread has the ability to create additional threads. Each thread is associated with an instance of the class thread with a capital T. We can directly control thread creation and management by simply instantiating the thread class each time the application needs to initiate an asynchronous task. An application that creates an instance of the thread class must provide the code that will run in that thread. And there are two ways to do this. Provide an object that implements the runnable interface. The runnable with a capital R interface defines a single method, run, meant to contain the code executed in the thread. And this runnable object would then be passed to the thread constructor. The second option is to subclass the thread class. The thread class itself implements runnable, though its run method does nothing. An application can then subclass thread and provide its own implementation of run. So which of these approaches should you use? The first approach, which employs a runnable object, an object that implements the runnable interface, is more general and more flexible because the runnable object can subclass a class other than thread. In fact, if you have a class that you've already created and you wish to endow this class with the ability to be run in its own thread of execution, then you can just take your class and derive a new class from it that implements the runnable interface, pass that newly derived class to the thread constructor, and off you go. The second idiom, building a class from the ground up that subclasses thread, is easier to use in simple applications, but it is limited by the fact that your task class must be a descendant of thread. Now, the thread class defines a number of methods that are useful for thread management. These include some static methods which provide information about, or affect the status of, the thread invoking the method. Other instance methods are invoked from other threads involved in managing the thread and the thread object. The static thread.sleep method causes the current thread to suspend execution for a specified period. This is an efficient means of making processor time available to the other threads of an application or other applications that might be running on a computer system. The thread.sleep method can also be used to wait for another thread with duties that are understood to have time requirements. Two overloaded versions of sleep are provided. There's one that specifies the sleep time to the millisecond, and there's one that specifies the sleep time to the nanosecond. However, these sleep times are not guaranteed to be precise because they are limited by the facilities provided by the underlying operating system. Also, the sleep period can be terminated by interrupts. In any case, you cannot assume that invoking sleep will suspend the thread for precisely the time period specified. If a thread interrupts the current thread while sleep is active, then the sleep method will throw an interrupted exception. A thread's join method allows one thread to wait for the completion of another. If T is a thread object whose thread is currently executing, then T.join will cause the current thread to pause execution until T's thread terminates. Overloads of join allow the programmer to specify a waiting period. However, as with sleep, join is dependent upon the operating system for timing, so you should not assume that join will wait exactly as long as you specify. So being able to create multiple threads of execution is quite useful, but we need to make sure that these multiple threads don't step on each other's data, so we need to talk about synchronizing data and behavior across the threads. Threads communicate primarily by sharing access to fields and the objects that reference fields refer to. This form of communication is extremely efficient, but it also makes two kinds of errors possible. It makes thread interference errors possible, and it makes memory consistency errors possible. The tool that is needed to prevent these errors is synchronization. Thread interference errors occur when two operations that are running in different threads, but acting on the same data, interleave, which means that these two operations consist of multiple steps and the sequences of steps overlap. Now, these operations can be as simple as auto-incrementing a variable using the plus-plus operator. Thread interference bugs are unpredictable and hence difficult to detect and fix. Memory consistency errors occur when different threads have inconsistent views of what should be the same data. The causes of memory consistency errors are complex, but all we really need is a strategy for avoiding them. The key to avoiding memory consistency errors is understanding the happens before relationship. This relationship is simply a guarantee that memory writes by one specific statement are visible to another specific statement, meaning that the memory writes happen before another statement. So synchronization is an example of an action that generates a happens before relationship. The Java programming language provides two basic synchronization idioms, synchronized methods and synchronized statements. First, we'll talk about synchronized methods. You can make a method be synchronized by adding the synchronized keyword to its declaration after its scoping modifier. Two invocations of synchronized methods on the same object cannot interleave, because when one thread is executing a synchronized method for an object, all other threads that invoke synchronized methods for the same object will block, that is, suspend execution, until the first thread is done with the object. Second, when a synchronized method exits, that synchronized method automatically establishes a happens before relationship with any subsequent invocation of a synchronized method for the same object. This guarantees that changes to the state of the object are visible to all threads. Synchronized methods enable a simple strategy for preventing thread interference and memory consistency errors. For if an object is visible to more than one thread, all reads or writes to that object variables need to be done through synchronized methods. Synchronization is built around an internal entity known as the intrinsic lock or monitor lock. You may find this referred to just as a monitor in the Java documentation. Intrinsic locks enforce exclusive access to an object state and establish happens before relationships that are essential to visibility. Every object has an intrinsic lock associated with it. By convention, a thread that needs exclusive and consistent access to an object's fields has to acquire the object's intrinsic lock before accessing them and then release the intrinsic lock when it's done with them. A thread is said to own the intrinsic lock between the time it has acquired the lock and the time it releases the lock. As long as the thread owns the intrinsic lock, no other thread can acquire the same lock. Other threads will block when they attempt to acquire that lock. So when a thread invokes a synchronized method, it automatically acquires the intrinsic lock for that method's object, and it releases it when that method returns. And that lock release will occur, by the way, even if the return is caught by an exception that's not handled, in other words, an uncaught exception. When a thread releases an intrinsic lock, a happens before relationship is established between that action, that release of that lock, and any subsequent acquisition of the same lock. Now you might wonder what happens when a static synchronized method is invoked, since a static method is associated with a class, not with a particular object. In this case, the thread inquires the intrinsic lock for the class object that's associated with our particular class. The access to a class's static fields, as a result, is controlled by a lock that is distinct from the lock for any specific instance of the class. So static fields essentially have a class lock as opposed to each of the instances which have instance locks. Knowing about this brings us to the second way to create synchronized code, which is using synchronized statements. Unlike synchronized methods, synchronized statements must specify the object that provides the intrinsic lock. So you create synchronized statements using the keyword synchronized, then an object in parentheses, usually the keyword this, meaning that you're trying to acquire the lock on the current object. And then you have a statement block, set of statements in curly braces, that contain the statements to be protected. The advantage of using synchronized statements is that you may only have to lock only a few statements in the method. You may not have to lock the entire method. And so, given the idea that you want to acquire the lock as late as you can and release it as early as you can, using synchronized statements may allow you to provide better precision in the amount of synchronization that you need to have. I hope that you've enjoyed today's presentation, and I look forward to your comments and to your questions. You can email your input to me by using the question box found on this page. I will be answering your questions, and I will be replying to your comments in upcoming presentations. If you are interested in viewing my other shows, just search the GoGo Radio Archive for my name, Mike Simpson. If there is a show that you would like for me to do, please send me an email and let me know. Thank you again for your time today, and remember to tune into GoGo Radio, found exclusively on GoGo.com.